Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
The only safe place.
Sure. Once upon a time in the early 2010s.
Oh boy. Is this about My Chemical Romance?
Yes. Tumblr user Clumsy Octopus posted, "Flower language has always been an intense source of disappointment for me. Like, they all mean really generic things like love or forever or I'm sorry. I thought you could combine flowers. Like you could just send someone a bouquet, and from the combination of hibiscus and posies and tulips, they'd understand the rebel leader is dead, rendezvous at the docks at 8, bring the dog, you will need lighter fluid and a large tomato."
That does sound pretty Victorian.
Then, on Saturday, August 17th, 2013, at 12:54 p.m.
Wow, that's very specific.
Tumblr user Thursday Plaid reblogged this post to add, "I really hope no one's answered this for you yet. I saw this and got so excited that my obscure knowledge base might come into use. I had to stretch a few flowers, so to speak, but Victorian flower language allows for alteration in meaning depending on color, fruit, flower, bud, stem, leaves, and thorns, so I didn't feel it was too far out of line. This message would work best as two bouquets bound together. First, red nasturtium with no leaves. Red denotes a leader, the nasturtium a patriot. Mixed with white or red mask flowers, rebellion, red if you want to emphasize fighting, white, martyrdom. Around cypress, death. Then, chickweed, rendezvous, and blue convolvulus, night. Surrounded by 8 white poplar leaves, symbolizes the time, 8. Yellow iris, flame, and a flower that grows by rivers. And yellow prairie dock flowers, this is the closest I could find to docks. And one large tomato leaf, all bound in dogwood bark. Dogwood represents deceit, but as far as I could find, the bark wasn't used symbolically. And as you referred to the dog instead of a dog, I thought it was likely the pun should be a dead giveaway. So there's your rebel message."
All right, two things.
Yes.
I am very glad that in this one instance citing a Tumblr post, we didn't have to say things like Kramer's diaper fetish or piss vortex.
Correct.
So that was cool. Second thing, you're the resident Victorian expert. Is there any credence to this?
Well, this post has thus far incurred 253,600 notes and counting.
Wow.
Which does beg the question, Victorian flower language, what is it?
Well, apparently it's a covert way to send messages using flowers.
The end.
No, I suspect you've got more to say on the topic.
Floriography, or the language of flowers, is coded communication through flower arrangements, as Dee so notably noted.
Oh, I actually didn't think it was that intense.
Flower symbolism has existed pretty much ever since there were people and also flowers.
That's cute.
But like all things whimsical, the Victorians really went bonkers with it.
Was that term that we keep coming back to sickening whimsy?
Sickening whimsy. How did this come to pass?
Oh, it's got something to do with colonialism, I bet.
You're right.
As most things did.
Short answer, Orientalism. Longer answer to follow.
Okay. I love being right. I love just saying, like, it was probably some flavor of racism knowing the Victorians. It always boils down to racism or classism. You can pin it.
Now, sometimes it's sexism.
That's true.
In 1718 through 1719, Lady Mary Wortley Montague is the wife of English ambassador to Turkey.
Jesus. Did she ever undergo that surgery to remove a couple of frivolous names?
Alas, no. But she did write several letters home to England on several topics, including smallpox inoculation. She's pro-vax, rest assured.
Iconic.
And also about the secret flower language used by women in harems of Constantinople.
And with that, we've got our first blatant lie.
Note, there is no such language.
Yeah, of course there isn't.
Scholars believe she may have misinterpreted a, quote, popular rhyming game.
Leave it to an upper-class Victorian lady to be like, to hear, like, some kids playing, like, Miss Mary Mack, and she's like, this must be a whole language.
Listen, if some stuck-up Victorian lady came into my house and was like, teach me about your culture, I'm fascinated, you bet your ass I would lie to her until I was blue in the face. Oh,
God. Yeah, she would go home with a lot of misapprehensions about how the Turkish life is.
Then in 1763, Lady Mary Wortley Montague's private correspondence is published.
And it took them 4 years because of all the names they had to tack on.
Everyone is very excited about this exotic floral tradition of the East. Because Orientalism is in fashion and will remain so for centuries.
Oh, boy.
In 1810, French publishers start producing flower dictionaries.
Of course the French dug their nubby little fingers into this.
based on earlier tradition of handmade flower almanacs where you collect actual pressed flowers or just some pictures you drew slash painted of flowers into a scrapbook with some flower poetry and cool flower factoids.
Can we bring that back?
Yes.
That sounds incredible.
Spoiler alert, that's the entire reason I've made this episode. Enjoy. But now the flowers mean something because there's a dictionary.
All you need to do to assign meaning where none existed is make a dictionary.
I mean, is assigning meaning to nothingness not the human experience?
Yikes. Moving along.
In 1819, Louise Cortimbert, under the pseudonym Madame Charlotte de Latour, publishes Les Langues de Fleurs.
I know it's different in the native language, but like whenever a French person gives me their like their name and then their nom de plume, I'm just like, I don't understand why you felt the need to change it. I detect no difference between the sounds you just made.
You're still French, turns out.
Yeah, it's just like, my name's Mike, but my pen name is Bob. Like, all right, well, that's great. I don't understand. It's all that matters is that you're happy.
She publishes Les Langues de Fleurs, which is literally the language of flowers. Of all flower dictionaries of the time, this is the big one. It becomes a transatlantic bestseller.
Okay, was this based on anything, or was our Madame de Chevrolet, was she just sort of, like, hip-checking all these ideas?
I mean, she was like a rock, so...
What? Oh, because I call her Madame de Chevrolet, yeah, yeah.
It's very funny.
It's so good.
It's extremely funny.
It's like the funniest
funny.
Joke you've ever told. So was this based on anything, or was she making this all up?
It is based on kind of free associating with blooms and also general flower lore.
Okay.
Because, for example, hyacinth is the flower named for the Greek myth where the young male lover of Apollo got hit in the head with a discus and died, and Apollo was like, fuck, he was so handsome, let's make him a flower.
Yeah.
So, like, you put that into the lore, and suddenly the flower has meaning.
It's a gay flower.
Or is it?
Well, given that the only association you gave me is that it's about gay love, it's a gay flower now.
More on this later.
Oh.
For now, from 1827 to 1923, quote, at least 98 discrete flower dictionaries exist in America, according to Atlas Obscura.
Whoa. I'm wondering if they all have different meanings. Do we know?
Spoiler alert, yes.
Oh, boy.
But not only are there at least 98 dedicated, distinct flower dictionaries available, flower definitions are also a regular feature in periodicals such as Harper's Weekly, Atlantic Monthly, and Goody's Ladies Book.
Every time. Can't get anything together, right?
And flower definitions are also page-filling content in etiquette manuals, including Polite Society at Home and Abroad, a complete compendium of information upon all topics classified under the head of etiquette.
Etiquette? What is it, just so you don't give someone a flower that says fuck you?
By Mrs. Annie R. White, 1981. Nope, 1891.
I was gonna say, wow. This is Annie R. White throwing it back.
She was a little late to the game. Nestled between Chapter 28, After Marriage, and Chapter 30, Etiquette of Births and Christenings, is Chapter 29, Floral Language.
Huh.
19 pages of plant definitions, featuring 562 distinct plants.
You really weren't kidding when you said page filler.
Oh no. I have reduced this list to 69 highlights.
Nice. You know what that number is, right?
Yeah, it looks like a flower. That's why I chose it.
Dead. Tanked my dank joke.
I felt I elevated it, but truly it is the difference of opinion that makes this podcast sparkle. So, acacia, yellow, stands for concealed love. Acacia, green leaves of, stands for my heart is buried, affection beyond the grave.
Ooh, I like that.
Aconitum napellus is an enemy in disguise. Aloe is religious superstition.
That's not what I was expecting.
Amaryllis, coquetry, pride.
Wait, I'm sorry, first one?
Coquetry.
Oh, coquetry, okay.
Artillery plant stands for differences in word pronunciation between friends.
Oh, it doesn't, okay.
Sorry, no. Oh. No, that one actually stands for your shafts are pointless.
My what?
Your shafts. Shafts.
Like my wheat shaft or the shaft of my arrow?
Sure.
Which is it?
Both.
Can I see it? Oh, okay.
Your shafts are pointless.
So is it like referring to like an insult? Like, you can't hurt me.
I'm assuming it's about the guy's dick.
Well, I was trying to be like a little more highfalutin, and you just made it about dicks.
Asphodel means my thoughts follow thee beyond the grave. This will become a theme. Bachelor's Buttons stands for single blessedness and is listed twice.
I just need you to remember the Bachelor's Buttons is single blessedness.
More on that later. But for now, Bee Orcus means industry.
Why would you give anyone that one?
You need them to get the fuck back to work.
Go to work, Bee Orcus.
Belladonna stands for falsehood. Black Hellbore, it says, and I quote, relieve my anxiety.
As a demand?
I'm assuming it's referring specifically to the anxiety of will you or won't you marry me?
Oh.
But like, I also like the idea that it will relieve my anxiety in general because lordy, could I use some.
It will kill you, so I guess there's that.
Oh my god, it's true.
Pretty sure hellebore's poisonous.
Cactus stands for warmth.
Cactus. You're fucking rude, like there aren't more than one kinds of cactus.
I just can't imagine where they made that association.
No, I really can't figure it out.
Carnation white means innocence.
What in carnation?
Thank you. Carnation yellow means disdain.
Nice.
Carnation green is not listed, but more on that later. Circus, also known as Judas Tree, stands for unbelief and betrayal.
I can't imagine where that came from.
Shamapuse means handsome but dangerous.
That's the one. I'm going to be coated in Shamapuse.
Circea means I shall beware of your enchantments.
Imagine. Like, they just really thought outside the box for that one. Circea, yeah.
Clover, four-leaved, means be mine.
For what? Please elaborate on what I am being.
Just mine, be it.
Mine.
I was just really surprised it didn't stand for luck.
Yeah, now I'm curious as to where that, how that happened.
Coxcomb means you are a fop.
And that's the only flower you're getting from me, good sir.
But also, again, an extremely on-the-nose definition.
Well, yeah.
Whereas Coltsfoot is a little more obscure because Coltsfoot means justice shall be done to you. Because
a horse is going to stomp you to death?
I guess. Cufea means oddity.
Just because of the name?
I guess.
It's a weird-ass plant.
Cypress stands for death and mourning.
Well, all cypress or just weeping cypress?
All cypress. According to this particular chapter of definitions in this particular book, because, as we've said, every list is different.
Yeah.
But Darnell does mean vice.
Miami vice, I bet.
Datura stramonium, also known as thorn apple, stands for deceitful charms.
Because of the thorns, huh?
Deadly nightshade means falsehood.
I'm sorry, I can't get over, like, I tried to get an apple and I got cut. Deceitful charms. I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Deadly nightshade is for falsehood.
You know, you could have gone more on the nose with that one, I feel like.
Devil in a bush stands for perplexity.
Why did they name it that?
Chinese pink means repulsed, but not in despair.
Okay. All right. You know,
Bleeding heart means compassion.
And bleeding hearts are Dicentras, right?
Yes, Dicentra spectabilis.
So I want to know exactly what kind of bleeding heart. I like them.
Because you're a big fucking nerd and you also read Holdfast.
Yeah, I did. All should read it, I think.
Elm stands for English dignity. For precisely one line until it gets listed again directly below that. Same word, elm, American patriotism.
I really like what that gets, like, both those definitions really work for me because of the eventual scourge of Dutch elm disease.
Yes, it's interesting that once elms become diseased, they are Dutch. Neither America nor England will claim them.
No, the Dutch killed the English and the American.
Fern means fascination. However, other publications separate out different fern varieties into different meanings. For example, maidenhair fern means discretion.
Oh my. Best watch out, someone hands you some maidenhair.
Foxglove means insincerity.
Now that's... okay. Alright, sure. I don't understand that.
Hemlock means you will cause my death.
Talk about on the nose.
Now, purple hyacinth is for sorrow. White hyacinth is for unobtrusive loveliness. And yellow hyacinth is jealousy.
Okay.
You'll notice none of these are gay love among the gods, but more later. Lepidgeria rosea means there is no unalloyed good, which means it's the goldfinch of plants.
It's a really fucking dark take to just put on a plant.
Yellow lilies are false and gay.
I'm gonna get that tattooed on me, I think.
Which may explain Oscar Wilde's fondness for lilies.
That's really good.
Locust leaves green also means affection beyond the grave.
You know, I can't put my finger on it, but they seem to have a preoccupation. A
lot of vampire affections going around. Speaking of, Mandrake stands for horror and rarity.
Horror?
And rarity.
Horror, though.
Horror rarity.
I don't understand that. I thought Mandrake was always very strongly associated with fertility.
Rural juror.
What?
Horror and rarity are very difficult for me to pronounce, especially back to back. I feel like this book did that to me on purpose.
Right, probably.
Yes. Mint stands for virtue, which means my toothpaste is virtue infused.
Hey, you're a virtuous man.
Mistletoe means I surmount difficulties, which is interesting from a Norse mythology perspective.
Yeah.
Mock orange means I cannot trust you.
Because you will not give me an orange, you fuck.
Moneywort stands for acquisitiveness.
Oh, that was just like, well, you know, if we go with the obvious, it's gonna, it's cheap, you know.
They had 19 pages to fill.
Couldn't have said richness. Called moneywort.
Monkshood is an enemy in disguise.
All right, that's fine.
Nightshade is suspicion and artifice. Oleander means beware, discretion the better part of valor.
Okay. They really had a lot of fun with the poisonous ones, I see.
Speaking of, Pennyroyal is flea temptation.
Run!
Queen plant means supremacy and born to rule.
sometimes they're just, like, they do acrobatics to get away from, like, obvious definitions, and then they do shit like that.
Rhododendron means danger, beware.
Why?
You are asking me?
Yeah.
Oh. Fun fact about rhododendrons, if you look inside the flower, it has a picture of a rhododendron inside it.
Fun fact about rhododendrons, the sap they emit is incredibly beloved by flies.
Fun fact about rhododendrons, they were one of the few plants that could survive the acid rain of the Victorian era.
Fun fact about rhododendrons, they're nice. Sorry, I felt like I had to follow up.
Rue means disdain.
Wow.
Saffron, beware of excess.
Fucking saw that saffron was expensive. They were like, don't use too much.
Jerusalem cherry is deception.
Why?
Wild sorrel is he makes a foe who makes a jest.
Dude, fucking get out of here, clown. I'll sorrel your ass.
Spiderwort means esteem not love.
I was half expecting you to say spiders.
Thousands of spiders.
Esteem not love. Wait, so spiderwort was basically like the fucking like friend zone of flowers.
Tansy means I declare war against you. Scotch thistle means retaliation. I don't know what the Scots did to make this American woman feel that, but sure. Thorn apple is deceitful charms. Now, if you're saying, but didn't we already list that? Yes. Yes, we did.
With the exact same meaning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They had to fill 19 pages.
I couldn't think of anything other than thorn apples. It was weird.
Blue violet means faithfulness. White violet means I must be sought to be found. Yellow violet means rural happiness. Right. Sweet violet means modesty. And yet there remains a certain violet definition unlisted. More to follow.
Hmm.
Virginia creepers mean I cling to you both in sunshine and shade.
Not getting the fuck rid of me.
Walnut stands for stratagem.
Okay.
Whortleberry means treachery.
What is a whortleberry?
I don't know, but it's treacherous. Wisteria means welcome, fair stranger.
Okay.
Wisteria, the tavern innkeeper of plants.
What are you buying?
Woodbine means fraternal love.
Okay.
Sure. Sure it does.
Sure.
Wormwood stands for absence.
Because you're dead. Because you ate wormwood.
And finally, Zinnia means thoughts of absent friends.
Oh, left on a low note.
The end. So there are about 100 different dictionaries.
Whew.
Each with slightly different definitions, which means there's no general consensus about what flower code means. Both sender and recipient must have access to the exact same dictionary, otherwise you're fucked.
You're gonna send a really nasty message.
So who is actually doing this?
Was anyone actually doing this?
As far as communicating through actual bouquets is concerned, probably no one.
Okay.
As Atlas Obscura points out, only the extremely wealthy members of the upper classes can afford the palatial conservatories required to grow every flower in a given dictionary, much less have specific blooms available in whatever season you need to send a particular message.
Yeah.
There is scant evidence that bouquet messaging was an everyday thing even for the upper classes.
Huh.
As with many things, the possibility is sexier than the reality.
Yeah.
You may not actually send a spiteful bouquet to your rival, but if you did, you know exactly what flowers you would use.
Oh ho, you'd be getting so much tansy, Lady Violet.
For example, as Tumblr user Kochkes said, I'm just throwing the fucking dice in the pronunciation.
Yeah, it's fine.
So you need a bouquet of geraniums for stupidity, foxglove for insincerity, meadowsweet for uselessness, yellow carnations, you have disappointed me, and orange lilies for hatred. It would be quite striking and full of loathing.
It would be pretty.
And you'll note that all of those flowers have completely different definitions in the list I just gave.
Yeah, like, man, I gotta say, the fanfiction-esque potential for miscommunication is delightful.
Oh, but it is. Anyway, if we're not using flower language to communicate through bouquets, then what the heck is it good for?
Filling in space in etiquette novels.
Art.
Oh.
Remember those scrapbooks of flower drawings we mentioned earlier?
Yeah, they sounded cool.
Good, because they're still a thing. Flower symbolism also used extensively in pre-Raphaelite painting movement and other art movements throughout the 19th century, because the Industrial Revolution sucked and everyone turned to nature for escape.
Every time.
See also literature, because again, as Atlas Obscura points out, maybe you thought it was annoying that bits of Jane Eyre expect you to know French. Charlotte Bronte also expected you to understand that when Jane looks at snowdrops, crocuses, purpura aurolicas, and golden-eyed pansies in Chapter 9, she's feeling hopeful, cheerful, modest, and preoccupied with the connection between money and happiness.
To be fair, I did know all of that, but I'm also like an intense nerd.
Didn't you write an essay on the flower and bird symbolism in Jane Eyre?
I did, yes. the symbolism of flowers in the background and bird song. And what it communicated about the narrative and the motives of the characters.
You should have been the only person to pass that class. I wish to God it had been graded on a curve.
I wasn't the only person to pass, but that one did get selected for like a journal. So I was rewarded for the hard work I did.
Nice.
But yeah, it was really fun to try to explain it to people who asked me about it and watch them go like glaze over when they realize how like minute I had gotten into the details of Jane Eyre. Because, well, and like, the trick is I just didn't like the story.
So you focused on anything else.
So I hyper-focused on something else to make me feel passion. So there's that.
You have to find the fun.
You make your own fun, you know?
But given all of this, what killed flower language?
Global communication muddying the definitions?
Wow. Shit.
Oh, was that not it?
No, I just put the same thing that killed about 20 million people in Joy as a Concept, World War I.
That's pretty similar. Yeah. I mean, World War I ushered in the global, like, economy, too. So, like, I think they're pretty closely linked.
But much like humanity, flower language blooms anew from the ashes. On Tumblr, flower language is a popular fandom in its own right. And furthermore, is used in fan art, fanfics, and of course, flower crowns for other fandoms.
A natch.
And flower language gained a new entry in the 21st century with the introduction of Captain Awkward's African Violet of Broken Friendship.
Oh my.
It began January 18th, 2011. Captain Awkward, internet advice columnist, posted reader question number 5. How do I deal with a clingy friend who tries to take over my life?
Give them an African Violet?
Actually, yeah.
Oh.
In this post, Captain Awkward noted that, unfortunately, while our culture provides many scripts for breaking up with romantic partners, it has no template for ending friendships. There should be a ritual. Dear friend, please take this African violet as a symbol of the close and wonderful friendship we once shared. Please enjoy it in good health, and if you are having a problem or just want to chat, please call someone else from now on. And thus concludes our exploration on Victorian flower language for now.
For now.
You may have noticed some subtle hints throughout this episode to another deeper, more secret layer of flower language. A flower code used by a very particular community.
Which community is this?
The homosexuals.
We're the homosexuals.
The homosexuals. So tune in next time for vintage flower language as used by the LGBT community.
Nice.
The end.
Ba-dum-ba.
Sources include AtlasObscura.com's article, How Flower-Obsessed Victorians Encoded Messages in Bouquets, by Romy Stott. Archive.org in general, but in particular their digitized copy of Polite Society at Home and Abroad, a complete compendium of information on all topics, classified under the head of etiquette, by Mrs. Annie R. White, 1891.
Mrs. Annie R. White, you could have spared us some time on that title.
She had to fill the space.
I'm getting paid by the word.
Tumblr posts by Clumsy Octopus, Thursday Plaid, Demisexual Meryl, and Koshkes.
And we really hit the lottery on having to cite Tumblr users.
CaptainAwkward.com, reader question number 5, how do I deal with a clingy friend who tries to make over my life? And of course, blessed Wikipedia.
Blessed be.
So mote it be. Thoughts, questions, concerns? Urgent messages to send in flower?
Yeah. Acanthus. Tansy. No, I guess that's cool. I'd always kind of known that flower language was more of like a romantic idea than a practicality, but it's fun to hear about all the ways in which it was more of a romantic idea than a practicality. I am intrigued about the homosexuals.
Yes.
And possibly using flower language in a more utilitarian way.
Well, utilitarian is a strong word.
The wrong word, yeah.
It turns out if you just use, like, 1 to 5 flowers, it's much easier to keep standard meetings straight.
Yeah. Well, it's just also interesting because, you know, the homosexual community, the LGBT groups, do have a pretty rich history of symbolism as a means of communication.
Secret codes.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I want to know more about it.
Yeah.
And I will know more about it.
Will you?
You will tell me.
Okay.
Or I will send you Tansy Rue.
Thorn apple. Man, if you would like to talk to us more about Victorian flower language and other sickening whimsy, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com or hit up our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group Antiques Freaks Friends.
Have a fun craft where you make a flower crown that says how you feel about someone you hate.
Yay! If you enjoyed this episode or didn't enjoy this episode, but regardless want someone to know how you felt about it, you can scroll down to wherever you're listening to this and leave a review.
And joke's on you, person leaving a negative review. That helps us, so go nuts.
Our most recent review, learn something every time. Sorry, much fun to listen to. A wealth of knowledge in antiquing etiquette. From Mag Johnson. Thank you, Mag Johnson.
Thank you.
I'm assuming that was a typo.
I hope so. I'm so sorry. It's much fun to listen to, though.
I'm so sorry. This was so much fun to listen to.
Now I have to kill you.
Oh, God, no. Tansy.
Tansy. Rue. Thornapple.
Black Hellbore.
These all sound like warrior cat names.
Fuck. If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, we have an Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
Overgoing an overhaul right now. Ooh. Undergoing an overhaul.
We also have t-shirts and stickers with the podcast logo on them.
We do.
And if you would like to listen to deleted scenes, including some true bangers from this day's episode.
Yeah.
You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Like magic appears.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees, keeping the podcast lights on, and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
And generally just helping us find a will to live every day.
Yay!
No pressure.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Goodbye.
Bye.